Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to. I pushed it, but it didn't play. Welcome to Here Be Monsters Radio, your progressive weekend review of the news and stuff, whatever we're calling this government now or whatever we're in. We're going to talk about that as we usually do every Sunday at 6 p.m. And with me are my co-host, Wayne Johnson, and author, Presidential Authority. Where do we say that was? I don't know, Ron, but Ronald Feynman.
Yes.
And
Feynman all day and night, as I say.
Okay, good for you. And so off the topic of weddings and on to the topic of, I guess, the biggest thing in the news that I could see this week was the vote in Georgia, and it's gotten quite a reaction from people on the ground and people up in ivory towers.
Yes, and of course, Republican Party has declared war on corporations, even though they need corporations. It's such hypocrisy.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to go for them, you know what I mean? This is where they're siphoning off, but we will really see the Darth Vaders come out now in the corporate world, won't we? We'll know who's who through this to a certain extent. what Georgia has done is it's just the thing. You know, I was just talking to my accountant out in Alaska, and she is a Republican woman who is also, we spiritually share the same journey. And I'm a big old liberal broad, but we both kind of agreed, you know, hey, what the hell is going on anyways? We need a whole new system here or something. It really
the Republican Party is imploding. It's falling apart. It's really and now Trump attacked Mitch McConnell yesterday. Lago, and he attacked Elaine Chao, you know, the wife, and he said, you know, that Mitch McConnell didn't thank him for having hired Chao to be Secretary of Transportation, and he went after Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas because he vetoed a bill against, you know, that was going to discriminate against transgender kids, and of course it was overridden by the legislature, so it was going into effect. It's just sick, the things he comes out
of. It really is very petty. And I'll tell you something I've heard on the back burner because I got people that work in the vicinity that I know. The people of Palm Beach and West Palm Beach are not real happy that Trump is in residence where he is.
Right, right. Well, it's an embarrassment. I mean,
well, Palm Beach is always outcast and he's blackballed. I mean, he could not walk into the Sailfish Club to save his life. And
right.
The Everglades? No, I don't think so. And while there may be people who have quite a bit that do live in West Palm, they're not considered that. It's a very money-conscious community. And by that I mean, you know, ritzy, ditzy, whatever you want to call it. But here's the thing. In Palm Beach, there's the old money, and then there's the new money. And
yes.
he doesn't even fit into any category. They think he's, you know, a lot of people think he's just a shyster con. Gunner.
Trash. He's trash,
He's a gunner is what he is on half of the island. I heard that. That's the first time I ever heard that Yiddish word at the Colony Bar. By a gentleman standing down at the other end who was talking about Trump. He said he's a gonna. And I didn't know what
it was. Okay. And for those of us, what is a gonna in Jewish aspects?
Ganef. A gonna.
Yeah, I'm not even pronouncing it right. It's what does that translate into?
A cheat and a thief.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Am I right, Ron?
I did hear what you said.
I heard him called a gana.
I don't know exactly what that means. I would assume it means white, probably trash or scum. Wouldn't it mean that?
It's a Yiddish word that means thief and cheat.
Okay, so that makes him trash and scum, right?
Sure. I'll go with that. Well, don't forget, see, folks, we are educational radio.
I don't actually know the meaning of that word, but I gather it means, as I said, he's trash or scum, and that's what he is. He will never be accepted in polite society.
Speaking of words like that, my mom used to have a word that she used, and she was raised in upstate New York and out in the western end of upstate New York. And she would call people a hanyak. And you can tell by the word that it doesn't mean anything good. Am I right? It
doesn't sound positive, no.
I don't know what it means either. I don't know Yiddish, but it doesn't sound good.
It's not actually, I don't think it's a Yiddish word. It's just a word that comes from some culture that asshole of the crowd, you know. I mean, my mother was not one to curse, you know, out like her daughter might be standing in a crowd of idiots and say, "Listen, asshole." But my mother never would. She would say, "Y'all are a bunch of hanyaks," you know. And I've always wondered where it came from. And to this day, I have to Google that. So anybody listening, I've tried. I don't even know if I'm
I just wanted to say, you were saying your mother didn't use crass language. I never did, really. I was always called a good boy. But the last 5 years, I've used the A word and the F word all the time. And I'm thinking if the TV is keeping a record and they report it to the government, I'm in trouble.
let me tell you something, Ron. My mom only had one curse word she used, especially when I was a baby, a toddler. And that was S-H-I-T. And my grandmother said to my mother one morning when the Mickey Mouse was coming on, I guess, and she was feeding me, and she said, "You know, if you're not careful, Gwen, that little girl, that's going to be her first word." And that 5 minutes later, I was sitting in my high chair going, "Chit, chit, chit."
really mastered it since then.
And let me tell you the ending, the conclusion of that. My mother had the same thing that, like Biden's son did with the brain tumor and all. She knew what she could think clearly, but she could not. Her speech center was she could get a word out maybe. And no shit, guys. The last word she was looking at me intensely with those ice blue eyes, and she said, "Shit." And I knew what she meant. It's the beginning and the end. But a nice asterisk on that is that at Christmas time the following year, my sister gave me a little box that my mother had left for me. And you know how Hebrew letters have sort of a slant to them? It was a little tiny charm that if you looked at it, it might look like some little Hebrew kind of a charm. But what it says is, "Oh, shit."
Yeah.
And my point is, with all the calamity and everything that is going on right now, we got to keep a sense of humor somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
So
we have the lowest lights possible in the Republican Party. In the past, it used to be a party in the 60s and 70s that had some really good people. You know, I might not vote for them, but I can really respect them. There's almost nobody you can respect anymore. I did an article a couple of weeks ago on my progressive professor about the most disgraceful, reprehensible Republican senators in 2021. So if you give me a few minutes, I'll read the list to you and see what you think. All right, so chronologically, I'm doing it by chronologically of the states, that is, you know, by the state they're in. Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Oh, my God. Ooh. I don't know. Oh. The same state that gave us Bill Clinton and gave us, I can't think of the name right now, another senator, I can't think of the name right now, that was really good. Instead, we have Tom Cotton. Rick Scott of Florida. Well, you know about that.
God, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Rand Paul of Kentucky. John Kennedy of Louisiana. No relation to John F. Kennedy. He is a real moron. Josh Hawley of Missouri, who is a traitor and should be in prison right now. James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who's like 87 and still planning to run again, I think. You know, it should be long gone. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, the only woman on the list, but she's really horrible, absolutely horrible. Ted Cruz of Texas. Yeah. Mike Lee of Utah. And Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. What a group.
Right.
Those are just the senators. Go into the freaking Congress and it's
it would be Kevin. I don't have a list in front of me, but Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, who could be the next speaker if the Republicans win control in 2022, and he makes Paul Ryan look good, and John Boehner looks better than both of them. That's how bad things are in the Republican Party. Boehner just came out with a book in which he rips into a lot of people. I don't like him, but honestly, I think Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy are worse. Everything gets worse, you know?
I think Boehner was ripped between the old Republican and the new Republican, and he was standing on a fence, and he didn't make any good choices there, and he knows it.
And he ends up being pushed out, actually, in 15. He resigned, you know, because too much opposition from people like Jim Jordan of Ohio.
You know what I think really got Boehner out of there? I think he had to sit down with the Pope, the new Pope, for like 30 minutes he was with him. And when the Pope left, it was days, and he said he was gone. And I really do think conscious got him. I think he looked in a mirror and went, oh, dear. And it does, you know, people make mistakes and people grab for power and live these lives. And I mean, some people, I mean, they think it's fine to be, you know, it's like fidelity. I can be one and only here, but have fun there. And it's like, yeah, right. That's cool. How's that feel? You know, there's a thing called integrity. And
yes.
I think integrity is a goddess who has begun to and will wash it clean before the whole thing is over. But you know me, I think we're in a time right now where, I mean, people are less guarded about a plague that is still running free. I have to commend the Biden administration for their actions and how they're getting people vaccinated and trying very hard to get the states to get their shit together. I've gotten my vaccination. We are at a time. We got a caller, and I recognize that number. We're going to have some laughs, guys. Okay.
It is me. It is Sybil. It is Mummy. But I just tuned in, so I want to hear the conversation. So I won't say anything until I hear what you're discussing.
Now we're talking the treasonous Trump aspects of he's a piece of worthless shit. I think that's what I'm going to say, guys.
No, we're really not talking that. Ron had posted this week a great piece on, you know, just take a look at what the Republican Party has.
Yes, in the Senate. That's the most disgraceful, reprehensible Republican senators, including Rick Scott of Florida in this state. Ugh.
Are you discussing the Mar-a-Lago catastrophe where Trump has gotten up in front of all those people and insulted Mitch McConnell?
I mentioned it earlier, and he was insulting Asa Hutchinson for vetoing a bill about transgender people, even though it passed over his veto. I'm not an Asa Hutchinson fan, but I think he did the right thing by vetoing that in Arkansas. So I give him credit for that, you know, and you know, but he's attacking everyone who dares to speak up in any way, and it's just beyond belief. And they all cheered him there, the people that were in the crowd. I don't get
it.
I know.
Oh, my God. And we began speaking about how I happen to know that in Palm Beach, he is not wanted, not by the old or the new money. And there's just a very few sprinkled in there who are whatever power they need, they think they're going to get from this. But basically, most of them are smart enough to know to stay away from burning dog pile. The thing is that I was standing at the bar in the colony when I first heard the word. It's a Yiddish word, Ghana. And they were talking about Donald Trump, and that's a cheat and a liar. And basically, he isn't getting that much press, though, is he? I mean, I haven't been newsy lately.
Well, I first of all, I'm just baffled. I'm thoroughly baffled. Every time he goes to the brink, he goes to the edge, everyone shakes their heads. More and more Republicans sort of look at their feet or their hands, or, you know, a couple of them, like Pontius Pilate, go to the basin of water and wash their hands and say, I wash my hands of this. I can't participate in it. Every time there's more, but then the Republican Party steps back again and embraces him and goes ahead with it. All I can say is that I love history. And when I was very young, I took Latin because I went to a little private school that was very adventurous, and we took Latin. And I was fascinated by Roman history, specifically when all of them, but Tacitus and Suetonius and all of them. But I was baffled and yet stunned and amazed by Caligula and the end of Caligula, and how he had burned so many bridges and weakly would turn ally against ally and make them enemies. And then this person was kissing his ass, but no, 2 days later, because he was a psychopath, he would turn that person against someone. So everyone continually was in turmoil. There was constant bloodshed. There was constant conspiracy. And finally, his own Praetorian Guard, which was the inner circle of the inner circle of the inner circle, the most ferociously defensive of Caligula, who he financed so heavily that he won their loyalty. They would have shot someone on Fifth Avenue and gotten away with it. They would have been that, right? They were that inner circle. Finally, even they, in an underground passageway from the whatever Circus Maximus to the palace, said, you've gone beyond the beyond the beyond the beyond the beyond. You've gone beyond too many times. You've used up so much that we have to disembowel you here, and we're going to cut your dick off. We're going to mutilate you. We're going to hack you to pieces in this underground area. And the last words, supposedly, he was saying, you can't kill me. I'm a god. What are you doing? You're not supposed to do this. And, of course, by that time, he was in pieces, you know, and he had apparently killed his own sister and disemboweled her the week before, whatever. The bottom line is that I don't understand how much farther the Republican Party is going to tolerate this psychopath and his drama du jour. Every single day or week, there's a drama du jour on the menu. Mm-hmm. And he insulted the idiot Chinese wife of McConnell. You know, well, I even appointed her and they didn't thank me. Who says such a thing? Who would say such a thing? And worse, by the way, clearly he has rabies. Clearly he's demented. But
it's fine for God to intervene, if you know what I mean.
But I blame his voters. It's time for them to pick up their gardening tools and descend on Mar-a-Lago and finish this problem off once and for all. Where on earth is the Praetorian Guard to finally take him into on goal, the 18th hole of the golf course, and finish the problem?
You know who was with him golf today? Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who thinks he's going to be the Republican nominee of the Trumpites in 2024. Can you believe this?
Well, what Ron DeSantis said the other day, or today, whenever it was, when he was asked about masking and safety and all of it in Florida, I thought of you. I thought of Gwendolyn immediately. She's in a state being governed by that excrement, that literal bag of excrement, saying that we don't believe in interfering with people's personal rights on the vaccines or the masking or any of it. It's like, when will the virus take him and his family so we have no offspring? He's got to go.
His
children have to go, all of them. They've all got to go. But what's the story? What is going on? How
well,
are these people?
Let me interject here real quick. My wife and I went to Sam's this morning to pick up a few things, and I think I sent you a little message on it. There was this guy. He had on his white supremacist T-shirt, had the the Klansman cross on like on each shoulder, like where you see a military corporal have his patches. Only these were on both shoulders, and the back of his shirt stated, "God had to enforce His aspects and His will had archangels." So that's just all the proof we need that we don't need to be working and considering and taking anybody's, because basically, long story short, and I can't remember quoted exactly, but this stupid bastard thinks he is one of God's archangels here on earth to enforce his racist views.
Yeah.
That's Trump's voters.
Well, I think Ron would agree with me that what we're talking about here is the white supremacy gathering, its voice and coming out, and the Republican Party, they're voting in the, look at that green woman. Oh, my God. What
oh, my God.
Green. Yeah, and she, by the way, backs Matt Gaetz, the congressman who's in trouble.
Yes, that was hysterical. They even riffed on it on Saturday Night Live. Matt Gaetz was saying, well, it's been a great week. I've been supported by Donald Trump and by Marjorie Kelly Greene or whatever her name is. And then Jim Jordan. And, of course, immediately the Saturday Night Live crowd, riffed on the fact that, oh, dear God, you call those characters. The ghost of Jeffrey Epstein should come out of the ground next and give you support. I mean, Matt Gaetz looks like Frankenstein. And, packaging, form follows function. He clearly is a monster and should be sent to a windmill and set on fire, like at the end of Frankenstein. We need to get him up in a windmill, and then the public needs to set fire to it and cheer and laugh and point. It's inconceivable to me. And, folks, I just have to tell you, I love history, as you know, and I love American history at different times. And one of the most fascinating times of American history to me is the 1830s, like Andrew Jackson, and then up through all those losers till the Civil War. So you had like nine presidents, who either dropped dead mysteriously or were one-term wonders or whatever. And the whole thing is that finally, when you read all of that, when you read about one senator bludgeoning another with his cane in the Senate chambers,
he went to the hospital. He did recover, and he was nearly to death.
I know. I said nearly to death. He bludgeoned him. He suffered from migraine headaches and was, seriously compromised the rest of his life. Though he survived, he was definitely permanently injured. But my point was that I wanted to say was that constant heaving, the country heaving over the toilet repeatedly on these decade after decade after decade until finally it had to vomit the Civil War. There was the final purging where the country vomited and shat all of its poison out in that Civil War,
Civil War 156 years later, it's still with us. It's not over. The South hasn't given up.
Right. My point was that I think that I wonder if in 10 or 20 years, people are going to look at this, or at 100 years, and look at our period now and say, oh, it's just like when Martin Van Buren was president, Oh, it's just like when, Buchanan was president and Pierce. We are going through a period where we are trying to vomit. And are we heading for a second civil war? Is this really only going to be solved by blue voters finally buying as many guns as the red voters have and literally saying, we can't keep bargaining. We can't keep trying to bargain with these people. We can't keep conversing. It's going to have to come to, I guess, gunshots and bloodshed. Because what's going on? This is just shocking. And the Republicans refuse to lance their own wound and get the pus out. I think we're definitely going to see the Republican Party is definitely going to split. And there's just the way the the parties, you know, went through catastrophe in the 1830s and 40s. The Democratic Party was like, you know nothings, and this party and the free soil and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see the two-party system end. And I think that not like Anderson and not like, what's his name, Ross Perot, those were attempts at a third party. But this party, this Republican Party, is really, really, really on the verge of splitting wide open and having to face the music, and they just keep putting it off. And they're going to have to do something because they're the identity of the party. You watch Meet the Press or you watch Face the Nation and the commentary and these people that they keep bringing on, these Republicans who are sort of looking down while Chuck Todd embarrasses them with questions about, you know, white supremacists and Confederate flags. And, well, your supporter has a swastika on his QAnon page, you know, Governor. Where do you fall on that? Well, I don't want to say that Donald Trump is the Antichrist, but I do. It's like, come on. Come on. When is the Republican Party going to say this is too much sewage in our cocktail lounge? It's like, what's going on?
Well, it's just like in 2005, I had that about an hour one-on-one and a bull roast with Jack Kemp, and I warned him back then because they were accepting and embracing the fanatical religious right and / Tea Partiers. And I told them that it was made up of the extremist aspects of the Klansmen, neo-Nazis, the worst of the worst of our society, and you're giving them a validifying voice and validation. And I said, this is not where the Republican Party should be going, and at some point in time, you're going to regret it. Well, we have Trump.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Wade, by the way, if Jack Kemp was here today, what would he be saying? You think
he'd be saying to me, he'd be saying the same thing that Bob Dole would be saying and Dwight Eisenhower. I will never forget the night that Rachel Maddow said she opened her show and then she listed the things that she believed in. And it was like 5 or 10 things that she believed in. And then she said, she did that wonderful pause that she does. She's so marvelous. And she said, you know what, folks, that makes me an Eisenhower Republican. And
like a liberal platform when you look at it. It's amazing. What do you
said
think,
all
Jack?
Of these things, and it was just astounding.
I'm asking Wade for the minute, Jack Kemp. Yeah. What do you think Jack would say if he was here today? Would he condemn it, or would he just keep quiet?
To answer the professor's question is, Jack Kemp was nothing more than a corporate stoogie touting the corporate law.
So he would have kept quiet, gone along, huh?
If he were here today, he wouldn't be any different than the others saying, what's her name from Maine? Said, well, I think he's learned his lesson.
Snoozin' Collins.
Wait. You're talking about Snoozin' Collins, right?
Snoozin' Collins.
Listen, I just have to say this. I think that you're half right, and I think you're half wrong, because I think that you're right in the sense that Jack Kemp was totally a corporate stooge. But the problem is, gentlemen, and this is what Chuck Todd pointed out today, which was genius, you have all of these, you know, something, the country is fragmenting. And it was a time, there was a time when the corporations, that 1%, you know, $50,000 granite coffee table in the conference room crowd that then ran their businesses into the ground, you know, in 2008, the crash. This corporate crowd used to be totally on board with whatever the GOP wanted. And what is so fascinating and what is really compelling about the fragmenting of this country right now is that Coca-Cola is not so interested in the Republican agenda. Big baseballs, not so interested in the Republican agenda.
That's what's good.
You know something? Yes, my point is that the almighty dollar, it's like what Joan Crawford said at the corporate table. That's a knife that cuts both ways, fellas.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with me. And when it really comes down to the almighty dollar, you can't be a religious fanatic, throwback to the Dark Ages Catholic Church, the earth is flat. You can't be a political party run by religious fanatics and bigots and still sell Coca-Cola. And at some point, the almighty dollar finally turns on an abusive master. And so that's why Mitch McConnell said today or this week, corporate America should stay out of politics. Well, of course, until we need our donations. And it's like, you stupid hillbilly, you chinless loser. You've seduced them and wanted them, and you've wanted your bourbon backers and your Coca-Cola. You've wanted your sponsors. But when they finally say that the baseball stadium is filled with black people and white people, that every color person, every religion drinks Coca-Cola, and you're acting like an asshole, we're not going to pay your bills anymore. And that's what those fucking Republicans can't bear. They can't bear that capitalism can finally even turn on them when they don't play by the rules. It's
right.
Ned Beatty's speech in Network when he does that whole speech to the character, the newscaster, I can't remember his name, and he says, you have meddled with things that you do not understand, because the dollar is the thing that is driving this world, and you're blah, 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 and that's what Mitch McConnell at 80 should have been grabbed by his lapel, beaten up a little bit, dragged to a corporate table, and then told that he would not leave there alive, that the last thing he would leave with before he was killed with, you know, a paperweight, was that he has fooled around too long with the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
We're still so polite in this country. We're so based on our saran wrap and our deodorant and our LED lights. We're America. We won't have a French Revolution here. Well, we would never fight again. We would never shoot people in other states. It's like, how much farther do we have to bend over and lube ourselves up for the red voter crowd? They're a bunch of Nazis and thugs and illiterates. And even their one percenters are saying, oh, dear God, you are hillbillies and you smell bad. We can't sit at the same table with Matt Gaetz.
Right.
Matt Gaetz is a hillbilly. He's a thug. He's a creep. He looks like Frankenstein. He's not wearing $10,000 suits and going to a museum, a museum benefit for $1,000 a plate. He has no idea
like
who Van Gogh is.
To me,
he has no idea.
Miami, this Republican Women's Club. It was obnoxious this last few days. You know.
Oh yeah.
But at
like
some point, these Mar-a-Lago bitches who were so proud to be Trump pussy grab victims 4 years ago, all those billionaire women who said, well, he can grab my pussy anytime he wants. My husband's worth $323 million. He's our man. At some point, their friends are going to fall away. Other friends of theirs will say, oh, you know, Stacey, maybe you still like Don, but I don't. Look at Ivanka's friends, her Fifth Avenue friends. She and Jared Kushner aren't being invited to dinner parties on Fifth Avenue.
They're ostracized.
And penthouses anymore. They're stained. They're damaged goods. Nobody wants to sit with them at the Temple of Dender at the Metropolitan Museum.
That's why they're being so collectively to one another right now. That's why the Republicans are forming this tight little group.
You are so right. They're circling the wagons. You are so right, Gwendolyn. The only people that want to have dinner with them are their own hardening core. It's like a bunch of rich hillbillies that are still willing to deal with that horrible moo cow man, you know, from the riots January 6th. Those people are never going to be invited to dinner parties on Fifth Avenue. And so Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are now isolated. They're isolated into their own neo-fascist, whatever that circle of sad little friends is. But the Republican Party will tear apart. You see, the Democratic Party, for all its nonsense, it still is cohesive in its incohesiveness. That's what's wonderful about the Democratic Party. You invite everyone into the tent. And, yes, there's a lot of noise, but you know what? Everyone sort of likes each other. In the Republican Party, you have these QAnon people. You have people from another planet. You have Americans that slept with pods and woke up as other creatures. You have invasion of the body snatchers people that Dwight Eisenhower, Teddy Roosevelt, Henry Cabot Lodge, they would not recognize. Richard Nixon, horrified.
Somebody
horrified by
that. Ronald Reagan wouldn't recognize the Republican Party today. I think I agree with that.
Nancy Reagan would be mortified, because as creepy as she was also attempting to be old money. And she would not tolerate this moo cow population that certain people still are. But I'll tell you one thing. Those people that are worth $1 billion a person sitting at that Coca-Cola board table, they're not into it. They don't want Matt Gaetz over for dinner. And they're looking at Mitch McConnell, and they're saying, you're a tired old hillbilly from Kentucky with your Chinese wife who was a collaborator with that Nazi, that orange bag of monkey pudding in the White House. And so what the problem is, you all made a deal with Satan, and we're not interested in – we don't want to play golf with Satan. We don't want to.
Ron DeSantis
and we don't
wants
want
to play golf, though.
Well, I'm curious, though.
You know, I have an article.
I'm just curious.
Florida has three potential competitors for the Republican nomination: Scott Rubio, who's just been endorsed by Trump for 2022 for his Senate seat, and of course DeSantis. All three of them might be at each other's throats. Three Floridians.
I'm so heartbroken for Gwendolyn and my friends down in Florida.
I'm here too.
They have a trifecta of Satanism there.
Yeah.
And you know what I think? I'm someone who believes. Like, I believe in 18th and 19th century Satanism. I believe that Satan is like sort of a glamorous and chic character, and like snidely whiplash, that villains of the 19th century were brainy and smart. But you know what? Hannah Arendt was right. Evil in the 20th century became banal, or banal, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Evil in the 20th century suddenly became dull-eyed, not very imaginative. You look at the Nazis. There wasn't a great intellect there. I mean, Hitler was a compelling speaker, but he was definitely a C-minus student. He was a mediocre painter. They were all mediocre. Her point was that evil in the 20th century became it no longer had the flash that 19th century evil people. Germany became Hitler. It was no longer Bismarck. It was right. There was no longer some inspired, though megalomaniacal person like Bismarck. Not at all. Napoleon is still. I mean, even after Napoleon fell, they didn't execute him. He was so amazing a person. His concepts were so extraordinary. What his through line was, his theory of why he was doing this in the Napoleonic Code, he was so gigantic a person that they didn't dare execute him. They exiled him. And then when he came back, they didn't kill him again. They exiled him again. Maybe he was poisoned on that island, but that's beside the point. The point is that he was so gigantic a figure with such extraordinarily good taste. What he built and what he had designed and it's extraordinary, extraordinary. Hitler knew that he had to kill himself, because if he had been caught and dragged out of there, he would have been torn to pieces in the mud.
Well, like
the way Mussolini was. Mussolini was grabbed by a throng of angry Italians. Is there anything scarier than that? Italians angry. Oh dear God. You know, and finished off with his mistress. Uh-huh. And it's just like, but we have these banal people, and that's the problem, is that Coca-Cola and baseball and, Delta. Delta's not going to tolerate.
Well,
they're not going to tolerate that moo cow crowd. They're
gentlemen,
not.
Gentlemen, we actually have another caller online, so I'm going to open the mic to the caller from the 605 area code. Are you just listening or are you calling in? Hello?
No, I wanted to find out what the show was about. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can, sir. Okay. Fine.
Okay.
All right.
So, your show says Here Be Monsters. So I wanted to find out what the show is about. Because it could be anything. It could be about cinema. It could be about current events. It could be about pop culture. So I wanted to find out what's the thrust of your show.
Well, basically, I imagine you've been listening for a little while, and we're rather progressive or liberal or what have you, more progressive group of people talking about what we see as the woes of the government and the Week Review in news. The term Here Be Monsters is a cartography term which was used in making charts. Here Be Monsters would indicate the place that was uncharted at sea. So that's how that comes about as a title.
Yeah, the edge of the earth is where the sea monsters are.
Yeah, we're talking about monsters.
And also, I think,
of
and also, I think it's also the fact that this is unexplored territory that we, with the listeners at home who call in, are exploring. And, and I think that that's Here Be Monsters. It's like we're going into places that, you know, people need to search, which I think is kind of wonderful.
Okay. Yes.
Very good, though.
You're
so
going into uncharted
waters.
All right.
Yeah.
So what, while sailing into these uncharted waters, you're anticipating perhaps Moby Dick. So where are the monsters of today?
Well, no, it'd be more like the Kraken. Moby Dick, when we knew, was a whale, and he happened to be white, and Captain Ahab had a fetish for him. The Kraken, that would release and grab ships and just pull them under. That would be more.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that.
I do too, and I want to congratulate the new caller on the Moby Dick reference. I'm always open for a pun of any sort, so thank you for that.
Sure.
Glad you're listening, sir, and please enjoy.
Okay, so
tell your friends.
Okay, all puns aside, again, what are the monsters of today that you think are plaguing society?
I'd have to say number one is, I'm the only woman on the panel, so I'd have to say, I'm sorry, Mommy. Well, there's only two women
I'm
on the panel.
I'm thunderstruck.
I
think we have two men, one woman, and one mannish woman. Okay, there. Now let's go forward with the question. I'm athletic. Let's say that. I'm a bit athletic.
Oh,
all right, go ahead.
I hope you're not going to say it's a patriarchal society.
Well, it is. It's basically a globally patriarchal society, but it's changing over certain land formations. Things are changing. And yeah, I do have a big problem with patriarchal society, big time.
Really?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do. I, all respects, I do. And the other thing, I think what we're looking at is the overwhelming presence still of racism, not just in America, but globally. And what it is causing to humanity in general right now. I think those are the two big things, yeah. We have a presidential author on our panel, Ronald Fineman. I think Ronald would probably, and he's really the more conservative of any of us, and I think he would, as conservative as Democrats get these days, but I think he would say that, you know, there's definitely a big problem with, racism and
the
6,000 years of it's way too much. I mean, what is its resource?
Yeah.
War and plunder the earth. You know, we have a dying planet and we have inequality in one of the richest countries in the world, and children are going hungry. I mean, it's a laundry list that's been out there and everybody is debating right now, and it's certainly a part of the politics, but the politics have become such bread and circus that it's fundamentally right now just, it's really terrible. I mean, I was raised in a Republican family, but as my mother would probably sit here and spit it back at me, I was an Ike Republican. And since he left office, I think things have shifted in the party. Although there have been many wonderful Republican leadership, there's been lots of great Democrat leadership, but it's a machine in Washington now that is patriarchal. And it, if it doesn't change, you know, this is not about us so much as it is your grandchildren, my family's grandchildren. It's about the generations to come and how are we taking care of the place, you know?
You're right.
Okay. So you have a problem with men being in control, men being dominant.
Oh, honey, there are plenty of patriarchal women. I am not talking about men. I'm not talking about gender. I am talking about a way of governance and life and culturally festooned. I am not talking about men. I have a lot of men I love. I'm not being a smartass either. I'm just saying it's not gender. It's not gender at all. It's about a system of government, and many of them.
But you just chose to use the word patriarch, which has been used decades for only men, to now mean men and women, for your definition.
Well, basically, if you do look up in Webster's patriarchal, they define it as a system of governance. So,
oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I have close friends who are actually women feminist advocates who go, what do you mean? It's not about just the father figure. I'm not talking about father figures. I'm talking about patriarchal systems. And this has been going on for basically about 6,000 years. And it has everything to do with culture. It's not just American. It is human. It's human. It's humanity.
I know. What I've always said is that if anybody from any of the countries, the so-called developed countries, China, Russia, America, England, Germany, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
if they mm-hmm. actually knew on a universal basis to attain escape velocity, to go to other planets, and if they found a planet that was like Avatar, for instance, a peace-loving planet that was about 100 years behind in terms of military capability. And this planet had gold, silver, palladium, et cetera. And
yeah.
whichever country or whichever private sector got there, I would ask people, what do you think would happen? Do you think that these people from, let's say, America, once they got there, do you think they would try to negotiate with these people to get the gold, the palladium, the silver? Or do you think that after about a month or two, they would just decide to wipe them out?
I think you're right.
And
just look at human history, when the Spanish went into
exactly.
Latin America.
Exactly.
Right, things like that. What did they do? Said, hey,
what happened to indigenous peoples in the Western Hemisphere?
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, and even in this own country here.
The real sin
That's
is
right.
we don't need to plunder the earth. We don't need to plunder other countries. We have developed the technology and the capacity
right, so,
now to beat
so
everyone.
It's not strictly an American.
No,
not
it's
strictly
not.
An American imperialism. It is communism, which I don't believe is communism. I believe communism is really a front. I believe it's whoever is in charge, unless you really have a good moral compass.
Right.
That they will use whatever weapons at their disposal to
right.
assume control, even at the I think you guys probably know that the largest single source of death in mankind is not war, it's not natural disease, it's democide, it's governments killing their own citizens.
Yeah,
you have a point there. Yes, sir, I do agree with that.
Yeah.
And
we can talk about the Armenians, the Jewish genocide. We can go to Khmer Rouge, when Vietnam finally fell, the genocide of the Asian groups down there, the Chinese with the Uyghurs right now.
Yes.
So we can just, I can go on and on and on. It's man's cruelty to man, I think, through simple, basic human nature.
Well, you know, if you take a look at history, and certainly there have been matriarchal societies that have been just as bloodthirsty. I'm not saying that. But when you do take a look at history, and you, I mean, it had to hurt Golda Meir's heart to put into effect much of what she had to put into effect with the Mossad and with the Israeli army. That was not her purpose when she began. But if you look through history, at when I go to indigenous communities, I mean, the women of the Longhouse of the Northeastern Nations, the equality and sharing of a balance of leadership with integrity is where we need to get to be. And the reason we don't have it oftentimes is, yes, there are always going to be people who are power hungry. But when everybody has enough to eat and is in, being cared for in good health and has a warm place to call home, there's a difference in those communities. And it's happening right now. Look at Finland. Look at Australia turning itself around. Of course, there's a lot of political debate down there between who's in charge now and who would like to be in charge. I grant you that. But when you take a look at the balance of authority between the polarities of a more matriarchal and patriarchal working in harmony, you have healthier, more productive, and more thriving communities than you do in the dog-eat-dog, war-infested, resource-gathering, plunder-the-earth, you know, hell that we are in right now, by the way, which is being, you know, nature will rise up. I mean, personally, I think that COVID is something that's come out of our permafrost, but it ain't over. And it's funny, isn't it, how things get evened out. After the Black Death did its run through Europe, do you know what we had? We had a paid worker. That's what we had. We got an evening of the field because you got to pay these people to work for you. You can't come out and just be the lord of the manor and say, you're my chattel and you will do as I say. it's got to change, and we're at a point where if we don't change, if we don't make a choice, and we've got calamity right now, and Mummy's right, we are at a break point. Something's going to pop. Something's going to happen. I hope that actually what we're going through with this plague is going to bring people around to their senses and begin to see what is more valuable in their lives, their family, their health, how they are with their loved ones, who they spend their time with, instead of having a bank account that rivals the Jones or whatever other aspect you can throw in there about having more instead of having plenty and being enough. Sorry, guys, I just went off.
Very good.
No, but I was trying to answer the gentleman about the
patriarchy. I think he did a very good job. It was coherent and not radical. And it was very truthful, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about Australia, I know nothing about Australia outside of the fact that the COVID situation in Australia is being draconianly clamped down on by the Australian police. They won't allow you to leave your house without a mask. If you give them any type of resistance, you are arrested. That's coming
really?
Here to America. A lot of people. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Australian police are very, very serious about that.
I wasn't aware of that, honestly. I do know that all it took for Australia to have is one, you know, American styled shootout by a crazy guy in a crowd, and they took the automatic weapons right out of the hands of those who would.
Right. Same with New Zealand also had that.
New Zealand is where the Prime Minister said, because they had a shooting incident that was a shocker. It was absolutely appalling.
Yes.
And New Zealand is the one
it
that said
New
that
Zealand,
we're going to take
yeah,
all of these. There's no excuse. And this whole Second Amendment thing, giving people the right to have weapons. Listen, it's very simple. George Washington did not allow farmers to have the latest developed cannons in their personal armory in 1787. People in 1787 did not have the National Guard, the National Army's best weapons in their. They had weapons that were good enough to shoot, a squirrel. That's as good as it was going to get. There's no excuse for an American citizen to be having Pentagon level military weapons of mass destruction. It's ridiculous. For a private citizen to have a grenade launcher for a hunting so they can go a hunting, that is ridiculous. This has gone way too far, and the founding fathers would be stunned at how this class of people have Thomas Jefferson wanted them to have, you know, AK-47s, grenade launchers, hunting.
Actually, grenade launchers, Jefferson would be surprised at, but to have AR-15s, no, he wouldn't. If you read the transcripts of the Constitutional Convention, the Second Amendment was in there specifically for all citizens to have guns in order to protect themselves, from squirrels.
Yes. Well, the motion on the table.
You weren't supposed to have military style weapons.
It was the Minutemen.
Yeah.
That was the motion for Second Amendment, was the Minutemen. So people would be ready at them.
Yeah, the Minutemen for all people, for the militia, for all people to have.
Yes. Because
everybody was not.
It said regulated militia.
But you were not allowed to have military-style weapons. You're not supposed to have cannons then. You're not supposed to have tanks now.
People have shocking weapons.
Okay.
These people that they're catching are
astounding. But we have posse comitatus, which is supposed to be effective.
We're running out of time, by the way.
Yeah,
yes.
Gentlemen, I really hate to break this up. And caller, I don't know your name, sir. Thank you very much for calling in. We're always open to hearing or speaking with anyone. So thanks for calling in.
All righty.
And guys,
thank you.
We are at the top of
Take
the
care.
Hour. That means that yeah. we'll do. You stay safe out there. And Mummy, thanks for dropping by.
Well, no, thank you. And new caller, please come back in, because I've never liked the number of people that are on this. It's not a conducive number to wisdom. I think we're at 5, and we need 6. We need that extra guest, so please become a regular here. What's your name, by the way?
He already dropped
He's
off.
He's gone.
So
oh, shoot. Well, invite him back, and I'll get cheese and crackers and a nice Chablis for him.
There you go. Let's call it Bill.
Okay,
anyway,
so
thank you all for a lovely Sunday night.
It's time to say goodbye, all of us. We're going to come back next week, I hope.
We will be back next week. We'll hear from Mummy. And please, tomorrow night at 8 p.m., tune in for Come Now, Don't Sulk, because we need a little bit and a lot more of that. Learn how to plant a good garden, and we can talk politics in between. So,
good.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night,
everyone.
All.
This has been Here Be Monsters Radio on Sunday evening. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week, and that's our show.